And Americans, I think, do not realize, as they did for most of our time, that we've got to fight for democracy every single minute. This is a year we may lose our democracy. We may lose all sorts of rights. This is not a moment to sit on the fence. This is not a drill.
You are correct, historian Michael Beschloss. I hope America notices.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI, Round Mountains KKRN, and Eureka's KGOE. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, Eugene's KEPW. In Lancaster, Pennsylvania on WLRI, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, Columbus, Ohio's WGRN. Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on our fine internet affiliates, including the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, Workforce Rising, No Lies Radio, Verdant Square Radio, Detour Talk, and all your favorite podcast sites, or at least most of them. Blanketing Planet Earth, 5 days a week. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Don't look at me that way, Desi Doyen.
I say it sometimes, too.
Well, that's good. You should.
Sometimes.
All right. Anyway, as we welcome to the Bradcast, as we go to air today, voters in Iowa, Mississippi, Montana, New Jersey, New Mexico, South Dakota, and right out here in California are at the polls, we are told, for midterm super-duper Tuesday primaries in 7 states. Full results, or at least as full as available, or at least in any races we see as important in some fashion on tomorrow's Bradcast. But despite voting in 7 states on Tuesday, here's the good news, I guess. I've yet to see any major polling place problems with voting systems.
That is excellent news.
So far. Doesn't mean they aren't occurring.
True.
Just means I haven't been able to find any reports of them yet, which is hopefully a good sign. As I always warn, however, sometimes it takes days or weeks or even longer before problems with voting systems do reveal themselves, as we are currently seeing in Georgia, which I sort of mentioned briefly yesterday, in DeKalb County, where all manner of problems occurred with the county's voting system database, used with its 100% unverifiable, wildly vulnerable touchscreen ballot marking device, or BMD voting systems, that were forced upon the county by Georgia's Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, who, by the way, programs all of the machines himself at the state level. Well, not personally, but it's done at the state level.
For the entire state.
For the entire state.
So that means any mistakes go across the entire state.
And it's, by the way, it's only, it may be the only state that does that. I'm not sure. But, you know, Brad Raffensperger happens to be on the ballot himself this year, so it's convenient that he gets to control
every machine in the state.
Hey, there you go. Anyway, in DeKalb County, Georgia, hand recounts were required, and it's one of the most Democratic-leaning counties in the state, but they had to have these hand counts after candidates' names had failed to appear on the ballot, on the touchscreen ballots, in some precincts, but not all. Some voters were not given the ballot for their proper districts after Georgia's recent redistricting / gerrymandering following the 2020 census. And hand counts revealed that at least one candidate who originally came in third place actually qualified for a two-person runoff in the county. In other words, Raffensperger and his lousy Dominion-made computers failed, apparently, due to failed programming. And now other candidates around the state who lost their elections are asking for hand counts as well, even though Georgia's new state law, adopted by its Republican legislature and signed by its Republican governor, who used to be its former Republican Secretary of State, Brian Kemp, do not allow hand recounts at all, at least without a judge's order, nor any kind of recount at all, unless a race is closer than half a percentage point. But these problems in DeKalb County have made everyone else in the state wonder, hey, did we have similar problems on our systems? In short, it's a mess, thanks to the new voting systems in Georgia. And yes, that's just one of the reasons why we covered Georgia so closely and why the Coalition for Good Governance's Marilyn Marks has long been suing the state to move to hand-marked paper ballots instead of the unverifiable, wildly vulnerable touchscreen systems that Raffensperger has forced on all voters at the polling place. But this is the problem with both computerized voting and computerized tabulation of our results. Even when they are correct, it's very difficult for candidates and their supporters to know if it is correct, and that leads to all kinds of problems, some of which I hope to get into a little bit later in this program. Newly startling material about what has gone on since the 2020 election and Donald Trump's lie about it having been stolen from him. So in any event, yeah, things can go sideways in elections, even if the problems do not necessarily come to light on election day. In this case, in Iowa, Mississippi, Montana, New Jersey, New Mexico, South Dakota, and California, with their voting on Tuesday, we will hope such problems do not appear in the hours and days and weeks ahead, but we will be watching. In the meantime, we are still cleaning up from other midterm primaries past from recent weeks, where a few elections are still not yet settled simply because they were reportedly so close. One that became settled-ish while we were out last week was a critical race in Pennsylvania, where, as the Philadelphia Inquirer's great political columnist Will Bunch notes today, quote, "The multimillionaire celebrity doctor from New Jersey officially defeated the multimillionaire hedge fund CEO from Connecticut to become the Republican nominee for U.S. Senate from Pennsylvania."
Well defined, Will.
I would add to that descriptor, by the way, of celebrity TV doctor Mehmet Oz, now seen as the presumptive GOP nominee for U.S. Senate in Pennsylvania, that he is not only the multimillionaire celebrity doctor from New Jersey, but also, as fun luck would have it, he's an actual citizen of Turkey. Yes, the America First Trump-endorsed Dr. Oz, in addition to not being an actual resident of Pennsylvania, also has not renounced his dual citizenship with Turkey, where, unbeknownst to the electorate until very recently, but to whom Oz had declared he has no involvement in Turkish politics whatsoever, he was actually discovered to have voted in Turkish elections as recently as 2018. So that's kind of a weird choice for the GOP nominee to the U.S. Senate. But perhaps maybe not anymore in this day and age when...
Not for today's Republican Party.
Exactly. When loyalty to the U.S. seems sort of an optional thing, an optional characteristic at best for GOP politicians in the U.S., even those who declare themselves, ironically enough, to be, quote, America first. But in fact, our friend Will Bunch is actually incorrect in that, at least as of airtime, Oz is not the official GOP nominee for the U.S. Senate in Pennsylvania, even though his opponent, the hedge fund CEO multimillionaire from Connecticut, David McCormick, did not actually, well, he did concede last week amid a recount in this very close race between him and Oz, but a concession is not an official act. It is just a courtesy. A concession, in fact, means nothing. It does not make the other guy or girl the official winner. The official winner is named when the state's automatic recount, in this case, is complete. In Pennsylvania, the recount, as I understand it, is done by machines, by computers, as opposed to by hand. So take these recounted numbers for whatever they are worth. But as of Friday, yes, former hedge fund executive David McCormick conceded to TV doctor Mehmet Oz while the recount continued in the Pennsylvania Republican Senate primary. McCormick's unexpected concession happened days before the final tallies are set to be announced, but is seen as an apparent sign that McCormick believes he's fallen too far behind to make up the difference, at least as he saw it. McCormick said at a campaign party, according to AP, quote, "It's now clear to me, with the recount now largely complete, that we have a nominee." He said, "Tonight is really about all of us coming together." Oz will face, if in fact it becomes official, he will face Democratic Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman in the fall in one of the marquee races in a cycle that could swing Senate control, frankly, in either direction, as Democrats see the seat in Pennsylvania being vacated by retiring Republican U.S. Senator Pat Toomey to be one of their most likely pickups this November, as they try to increase their majority in a way that might overcome the deficit they face with obstructionist Democratic Senators Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, who have by themselves blocked what would have otherwise been a landmark progressive agenda from President Joe Biden and the entire rest of the Democratic Party, their agenda in Congress. John Fetterman, for his part, has achieved something close to folk hero status in the Democratic Party, according to TPM's Kate Riga, with his unconventional presentation and usually progressive social justice flavor of politics. But Fetterman released a statement on Friday disclosing more information about his heart condition after he suffered a stroke on the campaign trail last month. As it turns out, Fetterman had a heart condition that he had ignored for about 5 years, despite doctors' recommendations. You know who's a heart doctor, by the way?
Who?
That Dr. Oz.
Oh, right.
Yeah. He could help if there's any problems, I guess. Anyway, now...
I'm sure he would.
Oh, I'm sure, no doubt. Now it's caught up to Fetterman, unfortunately, at a very bad time. Reportedly, he is healing, getting better. He is reportedly out walking several miles a day, reportedly, according to his campaign. That's good. But apparently, he's still having trouble communicating effectively. As of now, his campaign says he should be back on the trail in July, but we will see. Democrats are very concerned right now. So fingers crossed there, as frankly, this should be an easy-ish pickup for Democrats in November if Fetterman can get his health back up to snuff for campaigning. Presumably for campaigning against Oz once the statewide recount is officially completed as of Tuesday, I believe. The Pennsylvania primary was originally held on May 17 when the computer tallied results showed a difference of less than 1,000 votes out of more than 1.3 million cast between Oz and McCormick, or less than 0.1 percentage point. Meanwhile, in Texas, which held its primary runoffs, on May 24. A progressive Democratic challenger there in a U.S. House race, a challenger to a longtime right-wing Democratic congressman, continues. And also a moderate Democratic challenge to a progressive Democratic House candidate also continues in Texas. Let's hit both of them here very quickly. Progressive candidate Jessica Cisneros announced on Monday she will request a recount in the hard-fought Democratic primary runoff against U.S. Congressman Henry Cuellar after she finished 281 votes behind him, according to the final canvass of all votes cast in the May 24 runoff in Texas's 28th Congressional District, which stretches from San Antonio all the way down to the border with Mexico, which is quite a distance.
That's putting it mildly.
For those who are familiar with Texas, as Desi Doyen is. So that's the ridiculous district drawn there in the 28th. Cisneros, endorsed by the likes of progressives like Bernie Sanders, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She officially filed for that recount on Tuesday. She was easily within the 10 percentage point limit that would allow her to ask for and pay for a recount in her race. Cisneros said in a statement on Monday, with just under 0.6% of this vote, symbolizing such stark differences for the future of South Texas, I owe it to our community to see this through to the end. Good for her.
Indeed.
Now, whether she gets a hand count or a machine count is unclear to me. If it's a machine count, well, it's worth the machine that it's counted on, I guess. But in fact, Cuellar, the sitting congressman, the sitting Democrat, is a pro-gun, anti-abortion Democrat. He's one of the very few left in the party. So good for Cisneros for stepping up here to make sure that all the votes are counted as cast. Cuellar, meanwhile, declared victory on the night of the runoff election 2 weeks ago when the count had him up at that point by just 177 votes.
Good Lord.
Out of about 45,000 that were cast. And, you know, I find those kind of declarations of victory. And we see this a lot. We've seen this. It sort of goes back, I think, to George W. Bush in 2000, as I recall. You know, if you're up by two votes, well, that's enough. I'm the winner. It's time to move on. Anyway, that's what Cuellar, a Democrat, did, you know, before even all the votes were counted. And, you know, I just find that sort of thing in these very close races to be obnoxious and disrespectful of the electorate. But never mind that. Cuellar has since built on his election night lead after mail and provisional ballots were counted in strongholds for him in two different counties. In a statement after Cisneros announced on Monday that she would file for a recount, Cuellar said, quote, "My opponent has every legal right to call for a recount, though she has previously stated that she won't stop fighting until every vote has been counted." Well, every vote has been counted, he said, claiming, quote, "she has no path to victory and will not gain 281 votes. I welcome this process as it will only further verify our victory." Well, I hope it does. He may be right. But it should be noted that when Cuellar first went to Congress himself when he was elected in 2004, he did so after a recount with his Democratic opponent in a primary that he originally himself had lost by 145 votes, only to end up winning by just 58 votes.
Oh, really?
Yes. So it's kind of obnoxious to make these sort of statements.
It's offensive at that point.
Yeah, right. In his own, against his own opponent in a Democratic race. Anyway, since the runoff election, Cisneros and allies with the Progressive Justice Democrats group have been fundraising for a potential recount. If Cisneros is still trailing after the recount, well, her campaign will have to pay for the full cost of the recount. If she has more votes, however, and is declared the winner, she will actually receive her deposit back. That's approximately $28,000 is the deposit for this for the recount. And then the counties will pay for any additional staffing fees that would otherwise be charged to her and her campaign. Cisneros challenged Cuellar in 2020. 2 years ago, she lost by 4 percentage points that year. And then she forced a runoff during the March primary by holding Cuellar under 50%. And yeah, in that 2004 race that Cuellar won by 58 votes, it was also his second attempt at defeating his Democratic opponent at the time. So the hypocrisy here runs very deep.
Oh, indeed it does. And, you know, I have to say the high cost of conducting a recount, the fact that Texas charges the candidates for that, I think it's a huge disincentive to ensuring accuracy of the tally.
Well, I think there's a lot of stuff that goes on in Texas that is a huge disincentive to assure the accuracy of the tally.
True.
More to the point, to disincentivize the public knowing if the tally was accurate in the first place.
Yeah.
Anyway, the winner of that runoff ultimately in the 28th district going to face Republican candidate Cassie Garcia in the fall. But that is not the only Dem-on-Dem U.S. House contest that is still in play in the Lone Star State 2 weeks after the runoff election. Another Democrat in a key South Texas congressional race, Ruben Ramirez, also said on Monday that he will ask for a recount, as well he should. He finished just 30 votes behind progressive candidate Michelle Vallejo, who for the open seat in the state's 15th district. So 30 votes out of about 12,000 that were cast, or 0.2 percentage point after all the votes were tallied. That district also runs, by the way, ridiculously, but hey, it's Texas, from east of San Antonio all the way down to the border.
Oh my God. Really?
Yeah.
I hadn't looked at that one. That's nuts.
Yeah. Vallejo, who emerged from election night with just 23 vote lead, that's since grown to 30 votes, already declared victory last week as counties were tallying their final ballots, padding her margin. Yeah, she picked up 7 votes. The recounts in both cases mean that it will be several weeks before an undisputed winner emerges in each of those runoffs. The 15th district matchup had been closely watched because the two candidates there are vying to be the Democratic nominee in what's expected to be the most competitive congressional race this fall in Texas. Ramirez ran against a moderate, and Vallejo as a progressive. Republicans already picked their nominee. That's Monica De La Cruz in the March primary. The seat is open after the incumbent Democratic Congressman Vicente Gonzalez chose to run for re-election in a neighboring district due to redistricting in Texas. While the Cuellar Cisneros race is likely to end up with a Democrat in the seat no matter who ends up winning, that's not necessarily the case in the newly drawn 15th district, where Democrats could lose a House seat that they currently hold, thanks in no small part to, yes, Republican gerrymandering in the state. And of course, the Democrats' ability to hold their majority in the U.S. House, their very slim majority right now, to hold that at all in this November is made none the easier by GOP gerrymandering in that state and in a whole bunch of others that we've been following in recent months. We got a bit more news on that front today. Yes, all of this redistricting is still not settled, and this news is not necessarily good news for Democrats or for democracy, for that matter. Late last week, while we were enjoying some downtime, the Florida Supreme Court refused on Thursday to step into a challenge to a new map of the state's 28 congressional districts that were approved by the Republican state legislature, paving the way for November elections to be based on districts that a lower court in Florida had said diluted the voting power of black residents in violation of the state constitution. But apparently now, the Florida Supreme Court is just fine with that. Not a problem. Diluting the voting power of black residents? Even though the state constitution says that must not happen? Well, you know, stuff happens. The state Supreme Court's two-sentence denial said that it was premature for the justices to intervene in a suit seeking to overturn the congressional map because the case had not yet wound its way through the state court system, which could take months or even years. But really, you know, what's the rush? Just because there's an election on these new maps, maps found to be in violation of the state's own constitution, an election happening this November with primary elections in August, no big deal. They'll get to that whole constitutionality thing eventually, maybe. The new House map was personally ordered by Governor Ron DeSantis, a Republican, after he had vetoed a map that was drawn by the Republican-controlled state legislature. The new map dismantles a House district held by Congressman Al Lawson, an African-American Democrat, and strongly boosts Republican odds of capturing other competitive House seats in the state. Again, just so you understand, the GOP state legislature had already drawn up their own gerrymander for the state, but it wasn't gerrymandered enough for Republican Governor Ron DeSantis, who ordered an even more gerrymandered map for the state, a state which he originally won, by the way, in his own statewide election back in 2018 by less than 0.5 percentage point. A bit over 30,000 votes out of more than 8.2 million cast across the state. That's how closely the state was divided in 2018. Now, in 2020, Donald Trump reportedly did a little bit better statewide, carrying Florida by 3.3 percentage points. Still a very close race. But in the new congressional map ordered by DeSantis and subsequently found to be in violation of the state's constitution, which the state Supreme Court has said, go ahead, use it anyway. Well, this new map that looks like it's going to be used, Trump was favored by a majority of voters in 20 of the 28 districts that were drawn. In other words, under this new map, Republicans stand to gain 4 new GOP-leaning seats in an already previously gerrymandered state. And that may, likely mean that the state will have 20 Republican House members to just 8 Democratic House members. A 20-8 advantage in the U.S. House delegation in a state that Republicans just barely won statewide in 2020. Voting rights groups had argued that the map blatantly ignored an amendment to the state constitution that was approved by voters in 2010, outlawing partisan map making and specifically barred the creation of districts that diminished the ability of minority voters to elect their chosen candidates. But never mind the state constitution. A lower court actually, paid attention to the state constitution and agreed that this map was unlawful, unconstitutional. But apparently when it comes to DeSantis's own gerrymandered state Supreme Court, well, what does it matter what the voters of Florida overwhelmingly voted to include in their own state constitution? They'll get to that later, maybe, after Republicans, steal a few more seats in the U.S. House for the next 2 years or so.
Good luck ever trying to vote out a Republican in Florida. They are really trying to engineer a permanent power.
That's what they do. A lower court had blocked that Republican map from taking effect last month, which we reported as good news at the time. They substituted a map drawn by a Harvard University redistricting expert. But the state's first district court of appeals later lifted that stay, saying that the judge had exceeded his authority by ordering, an actually fair map. The Supreme Court ruling on Thursday last week rebuffs a request to overturn the appeals court decision, leaving DeSantis's extreme gerrymander in place for this year, most likely. University of California Irvine election law expert Rick Hassan said, quote, "At this point, it seems hard to see congressional maps being upset for this November, especially given the U.S. Supreme Court's repeated admonitions to federal courts to hold back on changes to election laws in the period close to the election." That, of course, is an admonition that the GOP's corrupt and stolen and packed U.S. Supreme Court tends to follow, well, whenever they feel like it, and they ignore whenever they want to, allowing gerrymandered maps to stay in place for Republicans, blocking lower federal courts who find state maps to be unlawful gerrymanders. The Florida Supreme Court now apparently seems to be taking their cues from that stolen U.S. Supreme Court. What's a little unconstitutionality, after all, when it favors our party in an election? We've seen quite a bit of that this cycle. Just a few examples. In addition to Florida, the Kansas Supreme Court overruled a lower court finding that had declared a GOP-drawn map to be an unconstitutional gerrymander. In Alabama, the U.S. Supreme Court reinstated a map that was drawn by Republicans that a lower federal court had said diluted the power of black voters. Sound familiar? And that lower court had ordered an additional black majority district to be drawn, but SCOTUS had no problem blocking that order, no matter how close it came to this year's elections. The state Supreme Court in Ohio is planning to hold a hearing on a new GOP-friendly map sometime after May 3, the May 3 primary, which used the state's GOP gerrymandered map for the critical 2022 cycle, while they decide if it's fair or constitutional. Go ahead, hold that primary, use those gerrymandered maps, and we'll figure all of this out later. In Louisiana, however, late on Monday night, there was some potentially better news for Democrats, at least until the U.S. Supreme Court decides to jump in and tell the lower courts, it's too late for you to do this. Louisiana's Democratic governor said on Monday that he will call the Republican-dominated legislature back into special session to draw up new congressional district boundaries now that a federal judge has blocked use of maps that have only one majority black district. Governor John Bel Edwards spoke to reporters minutes after the regular legislative session ended for the year and a few hours after U.S. District Judge Shelley Dick, also in Baton Rouge, blocked the use of these new maps. Her ruling included an order that the legislature draw up a remedial plan by June 20. Governor Edwards, whose veto of the previous maps was overridden by GOP lawmakers earlier this year, said there should have been a second majority black district among the six districts that were approved, noting that the state's population is almost one-third black. So just to help you there with the math, one-third black, but the existing map had just one out of six congressional districts with a black majority. Governor Edwards said redrawing the redistrict lines is required by the court order, by the Voting Rights Act, and by, quote, basic fairness and basic math. Well, pshaw. A court order, the Voting Rights Act, basic fairness. What year does this guy think he is living in? Lawyers for the Republican Secretary of State in Louisiana, Kyle Ordoin, he's the state's top elected official, swiftly filed a notice of appeal of the judge's order. Her June 20 deadline for drawing new district lines is 1 month before the sign-up period for the November 8 congressional election. The judge wrote, if the legislature is unable to pass a remedial plan by that date, the court will issue additional orders to enact a remedial plan compliant with the laws and Constitution of the United States. How quaint. The Secretary of State, the GOP Secretary of State, filed a notice of appeal with the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in New Orleans, which is often described as the most right-wing appeals court in the nation. So, in fact, while the news today is pretty good, I predict that the 5th U.S. Court of Appeals, and I don't do predictions, but I'm doing one here. I predict that they will stay or just outright kill the lower court's order. We'll see. Ultimately, the case could wind up before the Supreme Court, which, as noted earlier this year, put on hold that similar court ruling that Alabama must draw new congressional districts before the 2022 elections to increase black voting power. For now, in blocking the use of the map in Louisiana, the U.S. District Court judge said those filing the lawsuit against the current map were, in fact, likely to prevail with their argument that the new districts violate the Federal Voting Rights Act. She blocked the Secretary of State from conducting any elections using the new map. Enjoy it while it lasts, Democrats. As I said, if I was a betting man, I'd say her ruling will be struck down before week's end.
Probably right.
Well, I would like to lose that bet, but I think the lesson here is, at least for Republicans, is wait as long as possible to draw your maps so that when they are found to be unconstitutional, the U.S. Supreme Court's made up out of whole cloth ruling that we can't make any changes too close to elections, wait for that to kick in. Anyway, quick break here. More GOP undermining of American democracy is next on the broadcast as a new exclusive report finds that secret GOP intrusion into voting systems following the 2020 election was even worse than previously known. That's straight ahead, along with, Desi Doyen's latest Green News report.
Yay!
Right here on the broadcast, I'm Brad Friedman.
Hey, this is Desi. The broadcast and the Green News Report survive thanks to you and your support. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate today to help us stay independent every day over your public airwaves. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Where have we been? Welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. The broadcast, your democracy headquarters, apparently. We have been covering for some months now the disturbing cases of GOP election insiders in a whole bunch of states, like Mesa County, Colorado's County Clerk Tina Peters, and the Republican Board of Elections in Coffee County, Georgia, allowing or causing secret access of voting system software following the 2020 elections, making, you know, copies of hard drives and proprietary software in a supposed hunt for malware or some sort of sign that voting systems were somehow gamed in Democrats' favor in 2020. So far, they have found no such evidence. But in the meantime, they have stolen incredibly sensitive proprietary software, which arguably we should not even be using in the first place to run elections. But they've stolen this sensitive software. They've made it available to outsiders, which in turn could make it easier for bad guys or insider GOP election officials to manipulate or hack future elections. But today, as Reuters reports in an exclusive, we learn that these incidents in the great state of Michigan were far broader than previously known. Although the good news here is that with a Democratic Secretary of State and Attorney General and Governor in Michigan, maybe, just maybe, there could be some accountability for what appears at least to be a very broad conspiracy afoot when you put it all together. As Reuters reports today, state police in Michigan have obtained warrants to seize voting equipment and election-related records in at least three towns and one county over the past 6 weeks alone, according to police records, widening the largest known investigation into unauthorized attempts by allies of former President Trump to access voting systems. Now, we've all been sort of waiting for Georgia's Fulton County prosecutor, Fannie Willis, to bring an election fraud conspiracy case against Trump and his clan. But this reporting suggests that Michigan officials could actually beat her to the punch, potentially. The previously unreported records, according to Reuters, include search warrants and investigator memos obtained by Reuters through public records requests. The documents reveal a flurry of efforts by state authorities to secure voting machines and poll books and data storage devices and phone records as evidence in a probe that was launched in mid-February of this year. The state's investigation is probing breaches of local election systems in Michigan by Republican officials and other pro-Trump activists trying to prove his baseless claims of widespread fraud in 2020.
So they're breaking the law to try to ferret out breaking the law.
Correct.
Okay.
The police documents reveal, for example, among other things, that the state is investigating a potential breach of voting equipment in Lake Township, a small, largely Republican community in northern Michigan's Missaukee County. The previously unreported case is one of at least 17 incidents nationwide, including 11 of them in Michigan. 11 of them.
Wow.
In which Trump supporters gained or attempted to gain unauthorized access to voting equipment. The search warrants also authorized state police to seize election equipment in Berry County. By the way, I think I forgot to look it up, but as I recall, it's Biden won Michigan by something like 185,000 votes. Anyway, the search warrants also authorized state police to seize election equipment in Berry County's Irving Township and to have it examined. Local officials acknowledged publicly last month that state police had raided the township office on April 29, a day after the warrant was issued. Additionally, the records shed new light on election equipment breaches in Roscommon County. One official in the county's Richfield Township told investigators that he gave two vote counting tabulators to an unauthorized and unidentified third party, who kept them for several weeks in early 2021. The county's clerk acknowledged that she, too, handed over equipment to unauthorized people.
My goodness.
These are actual officials who just gave away the county's voting systems to outsiders. Sure, take them. Do whatever you want with them. Whatever. We don't care. We're only the elected officials meant to protect the sanctity of our county's elections. But, you know, have at it. And, you know, don't forget to give them back or something if you feel like it at some point.
If you get around to it.
Yeah, we won't bother to look, by the way, if you added any malware to them while you had them for several weeks. Man, Michigan's Democratic Secretary of State, Jocelyn Benson, told Reuters that the state is investigating whether the election system breaches are coordinated. And this is key. She said in an interview, if there is coordination, and you know there is. You know, these folks didn't just independently come up with these ideas.
Yeah, they're a little too specific across too many jurisdictions.
If there is coordination, she said, whether it's among those in our state or reaching up to a national level, we can determine that and we can seek accountability for all involved, said Benson. On February 10, she announced that she had asked Michigan's Attorney General, Democrat Dana Nessel, to begin a criminal investigation, citing information that state authorities had received about unauthorized access to voting machines and data in Roscommon County. In separate inquiries, state or local law enforcement officials have investigated security breaches involving voting equipment in Cross Village Township in Emmett County and Adams Township in Hillside County last year, all over the state. I have personally been watching that incident in Cross Village Township in Emmett County for some weeks. There's a whole bunch of video on this about what happened. I've been, you know, sort of trying to make sense of it after a tip-off from a listener there, which, you know, it was difficult to make sense of for a number of reasons. Among them, the village only has about 300 voters, and it's a very Republican part of the state. So why they would want to, you know, get into these computers and, you know, find evidence of wrongdoing in these tiny townships where Donald Trump easily won? Trump easily won all of the counties where these breaches or these attempted breaches in Michigan have been alleged. The results in those jurisdictions were affirmed by multiple audits and an investigation by the Republican-controlled state Senate, according to Reuters. That state Senate, Republican-controlled, found no evidence of widespread fraud. Again, this is the GOP-controlled state Senate, which did a multi-month investigation of all of these claims of fraud in Michigan, and then they came back with a detailed, lengthy, and scathing report finding not only no evidence of fraud, but they called on those who were claiming as much to be prosecuted for carrying out their own fraud in the matter. That was the Republican state Senate in Michigan. But some GOP activists and officials pushing election fraud conspiracy theories claim that Trump's margin should have been larger in those GOP areas. Really, these are areas that Trump won by 20 or 30 or 50, even 60 points in some cases. And their efforts are still roiling communities across the state. In rural Barry County, Republican Sheriff Dar Leaf has teamed up with proponents of the debunked claims that the voting machines were rigged against Trump. Sheriff Leaf is pursuing his own investigation despite being urged last year by Republican County prosecutor to suspend it because of no evidence. Trump won that county by a 2-to-1 margin. In recent weeks, Leaf's office has sent expansive public records requests to the county's township and city clerks seeking an array of election-related records. The requests were condemned by clerks and local officials in Reuters interviews and public statements as baseless and burdensome. An editorial in the local paper called Leaf's probe, quote, a waste of time and affront to our citizens. The sheriff did not respond to requests for comments. In an interview with Reuters in February, Leaf defended the investigation, said he was, quote, concerned by theories that voting machines nationwide were rigged to favor Biden, and, quote, we need to know if that happened in Barry County. So let me say this. This is the fruit of the poison tree of secret vote counting. This is what happens when we use secret proprietary software on computers to count votes in secret instead of publicly, by hand, in front of everyone. This is what I have been railing about, warning against for so many years with the systems we now use. None of this should be a surprise at this point to anyone. At least in this case, the sheriff filed public records requests. Public records requests, that's fine. That's one thing. I'm sorry if they're burdensome, as the county reported it. But this is what happens when you count votes this way, especially these counties, you know, where they've got, you know, 300 voters. You mean to tell me they can't count by hand? They have to have expensive computers to do it? So, you know, public records requests are one thing. And, you know, the idea that we need to know, we're concerned about these theories, that I understand. But getting inappropriate access in secret to voting and tabulation systems, that is an entirely different matter. That, in fact, is a criminal matter. The records obtained by Reuters shows that in Lake Township, for example, of a community of about 2,800 people, in Misaukee County, state police obtained a warrant in April to search the clerk's office for evidence of potential violations of election law. Misaukee County, where Trump won in 2020 with 76% of the vote, is home to Dare Rendon, a Republican state lawmaker who has embraced the bogus claim that widespread fraud robbed Trump of a victory in 2020. Rendon approached multiple clerks in her district, asking them to give people seeking fraud evidence access to their voting equipment. And apparently, they did. State police are stepping up an examination of alleged breaches in Roscommon County. In February, Secretary of State Benson said unauthorized people gained inappropriate access to tabulation machines and data drives used in the county and in one of its townships. That's Richfield. The state police records show that investigators are probing allegations that the Richfield Township supervisor allowed a, quote, third party to take possession of the town's two ballot tabulators for several weeks in early 2021. This happened all over the state. And now state investigators are looking into it, and Reuters is looking into the state investigators' investigations. I would expect more to come out of this, because in the meantime, all of this is costing a lot of money, not just a lot of taxpayer money, not just to the investigations that have to look into this, but in replacing all of this voting equipment that has been tampered with and accessed by unauthorized individuals. All of it has to be replaced because it's impossible to know if they have placed some sort of malware on those systems. Not without extensive testing that would cost more than just buying new systems. Well, the voting machine companies are happy about that. Where is all of this going? I do not know yet. But it is difficult to believe that this is not a coordinated conspiracy at some level.
It does smack of a sort of national coordination.
If it is, I will look forward to criminal charges, either at the state or the federal level at this point, because it's difficult to believe also that, you know, it was just a few folks in Michigan who came up with this idea on their own. This could go to a national level, and luckily in Michigan, you got law enforcement officials who are willing to take it to the federal level if need be. Let's just hope the Department of Justice is willing to do so as well. This story, I suspect, will continue. Good work over at Reuters digging into it. In the meantime, quick break, and we are back with Green News Report. That's next on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad. Here at the Bradcast and bradblog.com, we fight for election integrity all year around, like no other media outlet in the nation. But of course, we need your help to help us remain on your public airwaves and completely independent. Please help us continue that fight over your public airwaves by stopping by bradblog.com/donate. And thanks. Okay, no time for chit-chat because not only am I trying to catch up with a whole bunch of stuff we missed while taking a few days off, so is Desi in her latest Green News Report.
Get your stuff in order. Get ready for hurricane season.
While we were out, hurricane season kicks off on both coasts with Alex and Agatha. Atmospheric CO2 now at highest level in human history. Plus,
the president is going to invoke the Defense Production Act to manufacture more of these solar panels in the U.S.
Biden makes big moves on solar tariffs and clean energy.
All of those big moves and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
They want to know when you're eating. They want to know if you're eating a cheeseburger, which is very bad because Bill Gates wants you to eat his fake meat that grows in a peach tree dish.
Yes, he does. In a peach tree dish. Once again, this is your Marjorie Taylor Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, just before we left, you warned everyone that hurricane season began on June 1, and now, sure enough, June is here. Boom! Here come all the hurricanes.
Indeed. In the Pacific, Hurricane Agatha hit southern Mexico, setting a new record as the earliest Category 2 hurricane to hit the Pacific coast since record-keeping began in the 1940s. On the East Coast, Tropical Storm Alex, the first named storm of the Atlantic hurricane season, hit Florida and Bermuda over the weekend, dumping a month's worth of rain in just 36 hours on Miami, causing widespread flooding that triggered sewer overflows and no swimming advisories.
And just to be clear, both of these were the A-named storms, and both of them made landfall.
Indeed.
Not a good sign.
It is forecast to be a busy hurricane season, and new research concludes that man-made global warming has contributed to a decisive increase in Atlantic hurricane activity over the last 40 years, doubling the risk of extreme seasons like we saw in 2020. While we were out, Russia halted natural gas shipments to the Netherlands for refusing Russia's new demand to pay in rubles to fund its invasion of Ukraine. The European Union agreed to phase out imports of Russian oil by the end of the year, but pipeline deliveries are exempt. That's a concession to Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban, a close ally of Russian President Vladimir Putin. But EU countries like Germany and Poland said they'll end those pipeline imports anyway.
Good.
Carbon dioxide has hit the highest levels in all of human history.
Not as good.
Thanks to humanity's burning of fossil fuels and further pushing the planet into conditions not experienced in millions of years. CO2 levels are now at 421 parts per million in the atmosphere. That's 50% higher than during the pre-industrial age, according to NOAA. There's now more CO2 in the atmosphere than at any time in at least 4 million million years. CO2 is a primary driver of human-caused global warming and is already causing severe consequences.
421 parts per million?
Yes.
I'm old enough to remember when everyone was terrified that we would hit 400 parts per million.
And humanity is putting ever more CO2 into the atmosphere every single year. Some good news for things that breathe in Pennsylvania. The Biden EPA has moved to set more stringent limits on nitrous oxide pollution from 5 coal-fired power plants in Pennsylvania that generate toxic smog. The Biden Interior Department has approved the construction of a new 400-mile high-voltage transmission line to deliver clean, renewable energy across 3 western states, which is crucial to President Biden's goal of decarbonizing the U.S. electricity sector by 2035.
That's very cool. That means we can use solar power in one place and transport that electricity hundreds and hundreds of miles away.
Exactly.
Nice.
And finally, solar stocks rose after the Biden administration on Monday announced it will waive import tariffs on solar panels for 2 years. That move is related to a Commerce Department probe into possible trade violations by China that in turn has stalled solar projects across the U.S. The Commerce Department is investigating whether China is dodging U.S. restrictions by dumping below-cost solar components into other Southeast Asian countries that then sell into the U.S. In a separate move, Biden also invoked the Defense Production Act to expand U.S. manufacturing of solar components, insulation for buildings, electric transformers for grid stability, and clean tech like electrolyzers and fuel cells. Biden also moved to increase domestic production of super-efficient, energy-saving, all-electric heat pumps. That was the brainchild of author and activist Bill McKibben. On a recent broadcast, McKibben said, accelerating the switch to heat pumps undercuts Russia's energy blackmail by saving energy.
Anything that we can do to get even a few million homes off that gas before next October is a big blow to Putin.
Nice. Well, I'm glad that's finally happening at least. We ought to leave town more often. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Yo, bump up the jam, bump it up, bump it up. Yo, bump it, bump up the jam, bump it up, bump it up. Yo, bump it, bump.
Good news on those heat pumps.
Heat pump. Pump up that jam.
There you go. Thank you very much for another news-packed Green News Report. Desi Doyen, our producer, and thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, download it anytime for free at bradblog.com, where all of our shows are available to you. All of which is made possible by those of you kind enough to help us stay on your public airwaves by stopping by bradblog.com/donate to help keep us alive and fed and clothed and stuff like that. You can drop me email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. You will find me on the Facebooks and the Twitters at The Brad Blog. We will see you there at all of the above until we see you here next time with probably results from Iowa, Mississippi, Montana, New Jersey, New Mexico, Sandy, South Dakota, and California on our next broadcast. Until then, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
Bump up the jam, bump it up.